Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing, taking place on Saturday, June 18th at Nettle Meadow Farm. For more information, visit NettleMeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, MeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
America has too much cheese. You may have heard about this, but we've accumulated the largest stockpiles of cheese here in the U.S. since the 80s. There are a lot of factors that have contributed to this glut. An oversupply of milk, plunging prices, and a weakened euro have helped make European cheese attractive to markets in Asia, the Middle East, and here in the U.S. According to the European Commission, imports of butter from the EU to the U.S. doubled last year, while cheese imports climbed by 17%. With that in mind, hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Greg Blaze, and I'm here with Andrea Berti, Senior Product Manager at Atalanta Corporation and Board Member at the Cheese Importers Association of America. Thanks for coming on the show to talk about importing cheese to the U.S., Andrea.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Cool.
Let me tell you how pleased I am. It's so exciting to be here.
I love to talk to you, man.
I mean, it's...
You're my buddy.
We go back a few years, so yeah. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I finally get to record our conversations. That might not be good for you.
I don't know if that's going to be good, but we'll see. We'll take a chance.
So I'd like to start off by talking about the Cheese Importers Association of America. I don't know that many of our listeners have heard of it. We want to know, what is the organization all about?
So the Cheese Importer Association of America, it's an old organization. It was founded in 1945, right after the Second World War, like many other, international organizations. But the purpose of the organization is really to facilitate trade, to connect cheese producers overseas to consumers here in the United States. So that's basically the main goal of what we do. What does that mean? We really deal with a lot of government agency, USDA that sets the tariffs and the quotas for the cheeses, and also the FDA. So and to provide safety. So we want to provide an efficient supply chain and products in a safe way, and also a variety of products that is interesting for the U.S. Consumers. You think many times. Sorry to interrupt you, Gary, but we live in a free trade. In reality, there are a lot of regulations that you have to know, and you have to be part of it if you want to be part of this commerce.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a ton of back of house work. I mean, I'm a retailer, so my goal is just to get the cheese to me quickly. A lot of times it's not that I don't care; it's just that I don't have time to go through a lot of the machinations, those real back of house machinations. And I can only imagine that that organization was founded to provide that support, because us shopkeepers are kind of simple. We don't understand, all of the intricacies of those foreign markets and our domestic market and how it comes together. Do you know how your organization has changed and evolved since it's been founded?
Yeah, really, while the main goal stayed the same, the organization really, really changed in a way that, it provided a constant growth to their members, So it provided a platform of business to be developed. So the importers, the distributors, the people that were affected by the work really had a chance to build their own business and to create a successful way of importing cheese. I don't know if many people know, but the first barrier into a market, you know, in our business, you know, where we talk small producers, it's really the importer. The importer is the first person dealing with the producers, but also the first person dealing with the country where the product will be sold.
So it's the first gatekeeper, really.
First gatekeeper, and that's the key role, and that it was always the key of that, you know, for that organization.
How big is the board? How big is it? Was it the in board, its inception, and how big is it now?
I think it was, when it was founded, was about 8 members. Now we're about 22 members. It's really the main importers and the main players in the industry are represented.
Has Atalanta Corporation always been a member since its inception?
We were not since the inception, but we became a member right after that. You know,
because Atalanta is a huge company. I mean, yeah. you import all sorts of goods, and not only from Europe, you import from other markets as well, too.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, we import from over 60 countries. So we all obviously go beyond cheese, you know, so it's fun, you know, meats, grocery, you know, artichokes, you know, South America is a big, but also China, Thailand, tuna, very, very interesting variety of products. And that, you know, funny enough, the same year the Cheese Importer Association was founded was the same year Atalanta was founded, 1945.
But,
you know, and yeah, so it's been going on for a while.
So would you say that so you said the organization, it engages, I mean, it's there to promote trade. So does it go to, let's say you have a producer, let's say you're traveling as a cheesemonger, you're lucky enough to be traveling, and you're over in a food show like Chibus or the Salon del Gusto, and you find a cheese that you like, that you want to bring in. Is your job then to sort of go and make sure that all of their paperwork is lined up so that they can export and thusly import the cheese? You work with the FDA, you work with the USDA, you work with all of those institutions, make sure the paperwork's in line?
Yeah, you couldn't have said it better. That's absolutely the case. You know, you are the one responsible. Can you do it? Like, yeah, you know, you want the artisanal cheese from the mountains of,
right,
you know, southern France, right? And, you know, we are the ones answering the question, can you do it? Is it safe? And is it legal? You know,
right. And that's the big thing.
And how to do it.
How to do it.
How to do it, which is the, you know, is it logistical? You know, how does that work? And that's kind of what we do. And
so let's say I'm that producer.
Yeah.
I have cheese and I want to sell it in America. What's the first thing that you're going to ask me for as a member of the Importers Association? And is there an export group that you have to work with in a country, say, like Italy or France, to start that too?
There could be an export group. There could be a direct relationship with the producer. But in that case, if I communicate directly with the producer, I did my homework before, and I already identified if there's an opportunity of an importation of that product. So at that point, it becomes really more commercial. You know,
right. Why
is your product unique? What and how it fits in the American market? And I always look for uniqueness in product. You know,
right.
even in products, they are known to the American market. I mean, we enjoyed selling cheeses, even, you know, in Italy, for example, Parmigiano Reggiano is the most known and the best-selling cheese. But there are different Parmigiano Reggianos, right? There can be a dairy that is unique, that is different, that did something different to the product, that uses a different type of milk, uses a different breed for their cows. And these are the interesting things that we look for in a cheese producer.
But you get all the numbers in line. You get all the paperwork in line.
That's right.
You make sure that the FDA isn't going to stop. You're going to go through all this work, and you're going to get this cheese to customs in the United States. They're going to be like, sorry, can't do it.
Yeah, not only that. I mean, we obviously, you know, you have to get the paper in line. But if we suggest legislation to Washington, to the FDA, to the USDA.
Yeah.
You know, like raw milk cheeses, you know, like we provide, we support organizations that provide white paper, you know, so studies to say that the product is safe, you know. So we take a stand on where we think, you know, products can be exported or not. And we share.
And you provide your own science?
Absolutely.
To the FDA?
Yes. We share our opinions to the FDA or to the government agency that are.
Do they listen? Do you get a lot of pushback from those organizations?
We have some, it's very political. So think about years, think about time. But at the end of the day, yeah, we get some. We have some sort of a dialogue, I have to say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so in issues like, say, like wood boards issue, importing, for a second we were not going to be able to bring in cheese for wood boards. Did you get involved in that to facilitate to go away or to try to make it go away?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's that's a perfect example, right? So you want to be, as an importer and as a member of an association that facilitates the import and the trade, I want to make sure we bring, as many products as we can in a safe way. And we provided information that, those types of cheese that were mostly raw milk cheeses aged in wooden board. And if you think about it, it's basically all the major
Everything was up for grabs there.
Yeah. So we pointed it out immediately. And that was an example. Now there's a lot of talk about raw milk cheese. Do we want to stop eating raw milk cheese? No. Do we want to have raw milk cheese in a safe way? Yes.
Right.
That's our answer. So how do we do that? What's the science behind it? Beyond the talk,
you provide hard data to make sure trade is facilitated. How did you personally get involved with the Cheese Importers Association of America?
You have to be, I've been working
What's
for
your story? What's your story as a cheese importer? I mean, you're a behind-the-scenes guy. Like, we know you. I know you because we've done a lot of good work together. And also, you're a reserved man. You're not, I know you well. So, I mean, what's your deal, man?
No, I mean, look, I've been working in this industry for about 10 years, right? Uh-huh. So, but my deal is the passion that I have for food that always drove my choices. But, I grew up in a small town in Italy, northern Italy. And my parents, believe it or not, had a specialty store. So I grew up in food, selling food, talking about food to people. And I remember my summer say, come down and help out for a couple of months. And that was those were my days. So that actually drove my passion. That's what drives me today. And I stayed in the same niche. I like to say, I've been doing the same thing forever.
That's great.
But it's specifically here in the U.S. So about 10 years. So I moved to the U.S. about 10 years ago. I've been doing this for the same work. Started from through an internship with Atalanta.
How'd you come to work for them?
It's really, I did some I graduated at the University of Bologna,
uh-huh.
which is in an agriculture and economics program. So I had some connections. My major was in international trade. So when it was time to look
Sounds
for
right.
work, it made sense to look for companies that were importing products into the U.S. And cheese is a big part. I was just looking at some data from the Specialty Food Association and. I got data from 2014 was $109 billion in specialty food.
It's a little bit of cheese food.
Yeah,
right,
but the number one category is cheese.
Sure.
Amongst the specialty food, and that's it's a definition. I'm sure there are different opinions on the definition, but that's cheese is an important part. Meat was number three. I think coffee was number two, but. These are the products that, that also excite people.
They were the products that you grew up around, right?
Absolutely.
And so you had an interest in, I'm a lucky guy. I've always been able to do what I like. I've always wanted to work with cheese and I did. And it sounds like it was the same for you, you're having, your language skills, you come over to the United States, you speak fluent English and Italian. Yeah, man, they love you. You can go back, talk to those producers, tell them to get their stuff over here. I'm sure they loved you right from the beginning.
Look, it's fun. It's fun when you can connect to to cultures and you see a product that is made so far away, but there's some way to communicate why and how, and that's really, really fun. I mean,
yeah, that's the stuff, man. That's the best stuff. When did you join the Cheese Importers Association?
It was just a few months ago. I was nominated.
So that's fantastic.
Like, only
so your peers chose you for that job.
Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
So we inside my organization, they decided to name me and. So it was a great honor. It was a great honor.
That's fantastic. Before we go into the break, if folks want to learn more about the Cheese Importers Association of America, how would they do that?
Well, we have a website, you know, CIAA.org. And so you can look at our mission statements there. And we put together there what we do. And it's really a trade-oriented organization. But for buyers in the food industry, we sometimes finance trips to the food shows to learn about cheeses. And at the same time, right now, we're doing an internship program within our companies where we give a chance to graduates, you know, to come work for us for a few months in the summer. And so that's another thing, right? We want to build expertise around the industry.
Yeah, you want people to know about this.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. So
that's great. Well, congratulations on that. I'm glad that you're a member, you know, because you're my friend. Maybe you can do something for me, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's going to be good for you.
So we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come right back, talk to Andrea about some more cheesy stuff. We'll be right back.
Cheese and Spirits Pairing is a celebration of good food and beverages in the newly restored Barn Loft event venue at Nettle Meadow Farm in Thurman, New York. On Saturday, June 18th, come sample and savor, then buy your favorite cheeses and beverages to take home. Nettle Meadow cheeses have been praised highly in national media and have won prestigious awards from the American Cheese Society. Taste samples of goat and sheep cheeses paired with an array of local regional wines, beers, and ciders. You'll never forget your first sample of rich, creamy Kunik, Nettle Meadow's trademark cheese. In Esquire, our very own Anne Saxelby said, "Kunik, it may very well be the sexiest cheese in the USA." Nettle Meadow Farm is a goat and sheep dairy and cheese company in Thurman, New York, just below Crane Mountain in the Adirondacks, between Gore Mountain, North Creek, and Warrensburg. It's owned and operated by Lorraine Limbiase and Sheila Flanagan. Both have a great love of animals, artisan cheese, and the unique challenges of farm life. Nettle Meadow Farm was originally founded in 1990, and it's the home of over 300 goats, dozens of sheep, and a variety of farm sanctuary animals. Again, the Cheese and Spirits pairing is Saturday, June 18th. For more information and tickets, visit NettleMeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, MeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com.
We're back on Cutting the Curd. I'm here with Andrea Berti, and we've been talking about the Cheese Importers Association. For this next part of the episode, we're going to focus in and talk about some hot topics in cheese importation. Hot topics,
all right.
Andrea.
I want to get your opinion on this, too.
Oh, right? Yeah. I'm sure you do.
Right.
I'm sure you do, but I'm asking the questions in here, man.
Yeah. In a difficult spot here.
I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that cheese imports from Europe are up 17% from last year. That's a lot of cheese. What do you attribute that to solely? Or,
well, you know, it's really, 17% is a great number, but
it's a lot of cheese.
It's a lot of cheese, but I don't see it stopping. You know, I see the trend continuing that way. It's really a golden era for cheese and imports in general. I mean, it's people are more interested in food. I mean, you can put it the way you want, but that's a reality.
But why are we buying so much cheese from outside the United States? We make a ton of cheese here.
I think in general there's more interest in cheese because cheeses have stories, you know. Cheeses have stories. You know, European have older, you know, stories. It's easier that way to tell. So I think there's a little more romance that is attributed to those cheeses. But I see, you know, personally, I think I see growth in cheese produced in the U.S. as well as cheese import.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see one competing with the other, actually. I think that's a great opportunity to build a stronger market that way.
Do you see, because Atalanta is large and it sells to larger chains, do you see European cheese going to food chains that you never saw before, like large supermarket chains in the U.S.? Are they investing in like Parmigiano or raclette or just the or any name controlled cheeses that are made at an industrial level out of Europe?
Yeah, that's exactly the case. So what was ethnical before, it's becoming mass.
Mainstream,
and but not in a negative
no,
way.
No. It's just what it is.
It is what it is. I mean, you really don't have to go to, you know.
So you're saying us cheesemongers did a lot of hard work, and now those grocery stores are co-opting our hard work and putting that stuff on the shelf. Is that what's happening?
Now you have to come out with something new.
Really?
You know, and you keep evolving, but you've been doing it every year anyway. You know,
sure.
Your selection changes every year.
Sure.
So you'll be the innovator. You'll be the one looking for what's new, and they'll come to look at you for their selection. So you'll be, you know, you as a cheesemonger, you know, like even company like Italy or will be that, you know, will be the game changer.
Yeah.
Will be what's new, will be the... And retailers will come, and we'll do some of that too, but you will definitely follow the trends a little more. But I definitely see a lot of large retailers in the States now doing a lot of promotions focused on countries.
That's great.
Spain, you know, Spain is a hot country. Italy is still going strong. You know, France, obviously, for the cheese world. And
as long as those stores are also buying locally from the American producers, then I'm all for it. I like that people have rediscovered, like when I first started being a cheesemonger, that they rediscovered, you know, that cheeses like from France or Spain or Italy that are classic name-controlled cheeses that sort of get lost in the – they're not as trendy amongst specialty shops anymore, but they still have this market in a larger supermarket. I think that's pretty cool.
But I want to add something to that. You know, there are a lot of companies – you know, they're also producers, you know, importers that are also producers. So there are companies in the U.S., you know, it's not the case of Atlanta, but there are a lot of importers there.
They're buying their own stuff.
Yeah. and they're interested in that too, you know.
They promote the dairies they own, you know. And I see that. I see some of them purchasing dairies here in the United States. I mean, Roth purchasing dairies in the U.S. and also they own dairies in Europe and they own the distribution in between. I don't know what that. That's a little crazy, but or to me that's a different kind of economics. But so
look, without distribution, you know, it's going to be hard to create a business that is
suitable. You got to get the stuff to and fro.
And you got to show it to as many people as you can.
Right, and you have to have your administrative arm, the Cheese Importers Association of America, make sure all that paperwork is in line. So what are the hot topics right now in importing cheese? Like, what is, is it FDA regulations, inspections, or is there a lot of inspections right now?
Yeah. There's a lot of inspections.
What are they hitting you up for? What's going on?
Well, this was a major rewriting of the law. You know, there's a new law that came out. It's kind of a boring, but I'll try to say in two words. You know, it's called FSMA, Food Safety.
We discussed that on the show sometimes. Yeah.
Okay, so everybody is getting the paperwork together. It starts in September. I think we have until May to comply. And basically, it puts a lot of burden on us and on the producers to have third-party audits, to follow a certain, to document everything in terms of ASIP. So
control, super transparent.
Super transparent, you know, for where you get your ingredients and the allergen control. And obviously, there's a lot of risk in making cheese. So that's has to be...
Things are regulated against now, like carbons, right? I mean, like a charcoal and things like that, right? Ashes, right? Are all part of that new set of legislation that's coming out, right? People have to change the way that they coat and wrap and package and label everything.
Yeah, and everything has to make sense. You know, it has to be.
When you say that, what do you mean?
It has to be in a let's say
it's all controlled environment, or
in a controlled environment, or you have to prove there is a safe way of making cheese, and that's basically what is required. And the best way of doing that is through, you know, not me telling you, but a third party that follows certain regulations, you know, universally recognized regulations. To do it, you know, there are third-party auditors that can tell you, hey, look, why don't you go this way instead of this way when you do this, so you avoid a cross-contamination. And
do the producers trust those people?
Well, these are yeah. I mean, these are universal regulations. There are you know, a lot of countries in Italy and Switzerland, you know, having an ASI plan is mandatory by
which
law.
Which is great. I mean,
and, yeah, a lot of governments get involved with these regulations. You know, remember, a lot of the farming, you know, in the world is regulated and it's government. Controlled. So there's a lot of involvement of government agencies that way too. And look, the good part about this is we're not selling a product that is like a soda or anything. You really think the supply chain involved, right? A cheese is, where you get your milk from. You know,
That's everything.
Who are those 40 farmers?
Right.
Or one farmer?
Right.
Or three farmers? Where you get the raw material,
right?
You know, how you analyze it, I'm going beyond the safety, but also
that's important stuff, though.
Also,
that's it.
You as a cheesemonger, don't you want to know?
I do.
Details. Don't you want to know that dairy buys the milk from those farmers? And those farmers follow certain regulations.
I do.
Also, beyond safety, maybe they feed the animals. Only grass. They don't use grains.
Yeah, you want to make sure those animals are happy, giving good stuff.
Exactly. How cool is that?
Well, it is, and it explains a lot to cheesemongers, because when I feel like now there's more information than there ever was. But let's say you have a recall, you know, or you have a problem, a safety problem, and people want to rail against them. They say, well, see, that's what happens. That's what happens when you have raw milk cheese, and well, it's not safe. But in reality, it's not that. A lot of times those problems, in my experience from talking to people like you, come because the milk isn't sourced from places that regulate it, and it's all thrown together, and it's all flash pasteurized, and some of that bad bacteria lives.
Exactly. It's a lot easier to control a farmstead company than a company that buys milk
from different
farms, right? If you can, the more you control, the easier it is to prove it and to control it.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, I'm optimistic by nature, right?
I love
that. So I like transparency. You know, this is helping everybody, and you guys, you know, we all love cheese, right? We all love learning about products,
right?
This is a big opportunity to learn even more about the products and why those products are so unique and so different.
Absolutely. And I mean, why I like to work with you, and why I think you like to work with people like me, is because we're a sentinel. So I will push back against you because I want what I want, you know? And you do your best to get that to me, because it facilitates good business, but only in those lasting, sustainable ways where you can trace everything. So I don't say, hey, I need this stuff. Just get it for me. Come on. And you're like, all right, and you give in. And then there's a part of it that isn't been accounted for. Something happens and everybody loses out. And I think as a younger professional, I used to not care about that as much because I didn't see the consequence of it. But as I grow in my industry, I realize that those things are so important, and to adhere to those rules and standards are really what makes our industry sustainable as a whole.
Absolutely.
What is the biggest challenge for you as a cheese importer?
To me, it's really continue to be different, right? It's easy to settle and in selling what works. But I don't think that's sustainable in the long term. You know, like, you want to be different. You want to be innovative. So the research of innovation is that's what my challenge. That's also what's the driving force.
And you mean that in terms of your products? Like, how do you source Andrea Berti, your product manager? How do you go about sourcing product for Atalanta?
So first of all, I like to have new products every year, right?
Right.
So you know, in about a month, we'll have the Fancy Food Show, which is probably the biggest event we do for specialty products. And what is the first question that I get asked? What's new this year?
Sure, of course.
You know? That's
what
demand,
can I get,
right?
That no one else has?
Right. That's the demand. Exactly. What do you have that nobody else has?
Right.
Or what can I get that I can be the only one or the first one? And you know, that's the key. That's the specialty side of the industry. That's the innovative side of the industry. That's what the conversation, you know, that's what the conversation is about. That's also the biggest challenge.
So that's your biggest, and what you look for when you are sourcing cheese, do you look for like, so when you go to a, producer, which you visit, how do you get, do you get those leads by wandering around the food show? Do you go back to your region? Do you get those by word of mouth? Do you tend to, I mean, I know you have to deal with some larger producers at Atlanta,
right?
But I know through our business together that you also like to support the smaller ones. Is it a challenge to get the smaller people to adhere to all of those HACCP plans and getting their FDA number and paying the, and understanding that putting the money into to doing those things is of a value to them?
It is a challenge, but it's the only way. So I think everybody understands that, and it's happening. It's really happening. We don't have less cheeses than the previous year. We have more cheese.
Yeah.
We have more opportunities. So that's the answer.
So have you seen demand like change drastically in the U.S. in the 10 years that you've been doing this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen the market going from ethnic and to
cheese
retailers.
Is considered an ethnic food is what you're
right,
saying.
Right, right. A lot
it's
of
a
cheese.
A weird word.
Yeah. But I mean, I've seen major changes. Especially in the retail world, but also in the restaurant business, the food service world, I see a lot of people more interested in their ingredients and what they use for their food and the flavors. But the biggest thing is from ethnic to retail to.
So it's come out of this one aisle in the grocery store mentality, and it's more integrated into an overall selection. And chefs are starting to look at their ingredients in terms of – or restaurants are starting to look at cheese as something that's not buy as much of it as you can for as cheap as you can. They're actually caring about where it comes from now more.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even larger restaurant chains that you may deal with.
Yeah, even larger restaurant chains, you know, we definitely, you know, you can talk about, you know – going from Parmesan to Parmigiano Reggiano,
right.
You know, going from the
and having the people you're talking to actually know what that means must be pretty satisfying for you as a person who comes from a place where cheese is part of your culture,
right,
and has been for a long time. That must be very heartening to you to see people who didn't know that they know now. That means we're winning.
Yeah, that means that something stuck with the message, and the message is the right message. And, you know, it's really about, you know, diversity and choices. You know, I think the bottom line in the food industry, you know, we always talk about foodies, we talk about millennials. It's about choices, it's about information, it's about quality,
right,
in a broader sense. And those choices, you know, grew in this past 10 years, you know, too.
That's fantastic. So I got one last question for you. At the ACS conference last year, Kathy Strange of Whole Foods mentioned that some of the next hot topics in cheese are going to include large animal impact, sustainability, and GMOs. Do you see or anticipate these issues affecting cheese importing? Or what do you anticipate future issues or challenges being for your industry?
Well, I think that that's I definitely agree with that. I mean, I see... It's the same industry, right, we're in, so I can see the same things. But I can see another value in knowing, as a consumer, that a certain product is made in a sustainable way, that no hormones or antibiotics or GMOs are not used. So the communication of that and the traceability of that is definitely a trend, and it's happening. You know, we get
it. Is it a trend or is it something that's going to last? Are people going to always care, or is it something that they're just going to care about for a while?
I think that it will always care.
So it's an evolution then?
Yeah. I think so. I think animal welfare, GMOs, not being against or for, but knowing GMO, yes.
Knowing what it is, having the ability to make a choice on it?
You make a choice on it. I'll tell you what it is. Hormones, animal. Hormone-free products. I think those are important topics. I personally feel very close to those topics. I think I make a point of telling consumers and people in the trade, okay, this is done in a certain way, and I think they listen and they want to know. And look, consumers want to know that.
Yeah, they do.
Absolutely.
And I'm one of your customers, and I'm glad that you provide me with that information. We're happy to have you on the show, Andrea, and I'm so happy to work with you. You're such a straight shooter, and just been a pleasure these years to help build the Italy counters with you, and I really, really hope that we can do more good work and grow our industry in the future. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and thanks to everybody for listening. Be sure to stay tuned next week for more Cutting the Curd. Take care.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's been a great pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.